News World Headquarters in New York. This is NBC Nightly News with Kate Snow.
Good evening. Much of the middle section of this country has been struggling with ice and freezing rain all weekend long. That storm now blamed for 6 deaths across 3 states, and it is far from over. 13 states are under winter weather alerts tonight as the system shifts north. We begin with Blake McCoy in Kansas City.
Up to an inch of ice blanketing parts of Oklahoma today into the panhandle. Trees cracking under the weight. Power out for thousands as this 3-day ice storm deposits a trail of frozen danger across several states. In Nebraska today, a fiery scene when 2 semi-trucks crashed on I-80 near Kearney. One jackknifed, the other erupted in flames. Authorities in Kansas sharing this video of an out-of-control semi, urging drivers to slow down.
I'm Morgan Radford in Wichita. 2 people were killed in Kansas as their cars spun out of control on icy roads like these. Now, state troopers are asking people to stay home as hundreds more remain without power.
2 Kansas state troopers were hit while in their cars on the side of a highway this morning. They escaped injury. Power lines sparked in St. Louis as a second wave of ice hit there.
We got an entire truck coming in.
All across the region, hardware stores have seen a run on salt and de-icer. Tonight, nearly 16 million Americans remain under some sort of winter weather alert as this final round of icy freeze marches north further into Nebraska and Iowa. Right now in Kansas City, an army of salt trucks treating the roads ahead of tonight's NFL playoff game. The Chiefs take on the Steelers. Kickoff pushed back 7 hours to give the storm time to pass.
What do you think of the weather today?
Harsh.
This is Arrowhead, man. We'd be out here if it's like negative 10. We don't care.
The NFL says they push back this game tonight, not because of the game itself, but for the fans traveling to and from it. Luckily, the temperature here in Kansas City has hovered around 33 degrees this afternoon, keeping these roads just warm enough from freezing. Kate?
Yeah, a lot of people hoping the field is okay tonight. Blake, thanks so much. For more on where that dangerous winter weather is heading next, NBC meteorologist Indra Peterson's here with the latest forecast. Hi, Indra.
Good morning, Kate. I should say good evening. It's hard to believe we are still talking about the storm, even as now we're going through these overnight hours. The big difference here, though, is as we go through the evening hours, the storm has shifted a little farther to the north. So now we're seeing it affecting places like Nebraska and even in through Iowa. So what we're really going to be focusing on here is as the system warms up, we're going to see more rain in the south and more icing making its way in through places like Chicago for tomorrow morning's commute.
And Indra, as the ice moves to the north, what's happening in the south? Because I understand it's affected too.
Yeah, now we have a threat for severe weather. So we have an additional 9 million people at risk this evening as the system strengthened here in the south. So big cities like Dallas and even Austin will have to watch this squall line as it makes its way through the overnight hours. So the time you need to be vigilant is while you're asleep through these overnight hours, that squall line will push through the east. You'll have a threat not just for strong winds and hail, but even an isolated tornado. Okay.
All right, Indra Peterson, thanks so much. Now to the Trump transition. The war of words between the president-elect and civil rights icon Congressman John Lewis continued today after Lewis said he does not view Trump as a legitimate president. Vice President-elect Mike Pence and other Republican leaders also pushing back. Kelly O'Donnell has the latest.
Practicing the pomp. Hail to the dress rehearsal stand-in chief. An inauguration run-through today at a decked-out U.S. Capitol. Military bands on review as out-of-uniform service members played the Trumps and Pences, while today the real vice president-elect defended Donald Trump after his Twitter counterstrike against Georgia Democratic Congressman John Lewis, who said Russian hacking undermines the validity of Trump's win.
I was deeply disappointed to see someone of his stature question the legitimacy of Donald Trump's election as president.
Trump whipped up angry reaction with his series of tweets where he knocked conditions in Lewis's Atlanta district and accused the civil rights leader of being all talk, no action. Today, Trump adjusted his approach, tweeting, "Our country has been divided, angry, and untrusting. It will change," with exclamation points. Late today, new video of Trump was released as part of an interview he did with Britain's Times of London.
My mother sort of had a flair. She loved the Queen.
Behind his Trump Tower desk, his father's photo and memorabilia. Trump riffed on a range of international issues, but also said his own plan for presidential tweeting and social media has changed.
When you think that you have 46 million there, I'd rather just let that build up and just keep it at real Donald Trump. It's worth it. And the tweeting, I thought I'd do less of it, but I'm covered so dishonestly by the press.
When he takes office, Trump will get control of the official presidential Twitter account known as @POTUS, which has fewer followers at 13.5 million than his own personal account. But new tonight, transition officials tell me Trump is expected to keep using his own social media feed, not adopting a switch to the government accounts. And of course, Kate, this week, Trump is going back and forth making day trips between New York and Washington before he takes the oath of office Friday at noon.
All right, Kelly O'Donnell, nice to see you here in New York. Thanks so much. Russia hoping that the incoming Trump administration will work to improve relations between the two countries and ease economic sanctions in place because of Russia's actions in Ukraine. But at this point, many questions remain about what happens next, including when the president-elect will meet with Vladimir Putin. Bill Neely has our report from Moscow.
In frozen Moscow, relations with the U.S. are as icy as they've ever been. But they're hoping here for a Trump thaw. His team denying today Iceland would host a Trump-Putin summit.
The Kremlin claimed today there have been no talks with the Trump team about that first presidential meeting with Putin. But they are welcoming Donald Trump's hints that sanctions could end if Russia is helpful to the U.S. They're preparing for a deal.
Trump is a businessman. He wants concessions. He wants to get the best deal out of everyone. So Putin will have to be on his guard with Trump.
The Obama era is ending with thousands of U.S. troops arriving this weekend in Poland to deter Russia, and with Moscow claiming that's a threat.
What does America gain out of sending 250 tanks to Poland and to the Baltic states? We fail to understand this. This is the logic of a confrontation with Russia.
Like many here, he wants cooperation with Trump against ISIS.
We need to fight these radical Islamic groups. We need to fight them together.
From the Kremlin, a pre-inauguration message to America.
We're not bad guys. And lots of things that is being blamed on us and on our president, they're false and they're fake. Think twice before saying that Russians are bad guys.
Two nations at odds, now just days away from an unpredictable future. Bill Neely, NBC News, Moscow.
After Republicans took the first step to repeal Obamacare this week, the battle over the Affordable Care Act is heating up. Today, rallies all over the country opposing efforts to repeal that law. Former presidential candidate Senator Bernie Sanders and Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer led one of those rallies with thousands in attendance in Warren, Michigan today. It's part of a renewed push by Senator Sanders to reach out to voters. I had a chance to speak with Senator Sanders in his hometown of Burlington, Vermont, about the future of the Affordable Care Act.
President-elect Trump has said that he wants to repeal it and replace it pretty much simultaneously. Speaker Ryan has said the same thing. Can they do that, do you think?
Well, the devil is going to be in the details. But right now, as it stands, if you repeal the Affordable Care Act, you're throwing over 20 million people off of health insurance.
So what do you do as Democrats? Do you oppose whatever replacement plan they come up with? Can you see a scenario where you could support?
Hey, this is not a difficult proposition. What sane people will do is sit together and say, okay, are there problems with the Affordable Care Act? Yes. How do we address those problems? How do we work together? What you don't do is say, we are going to repeal the entire Affordable Care Act, and we got nothing to replace it. But I think there are some Republicans who are getting a little bit nervous to understand you can't throw 20 million people off of health insurance without having some type of replacement plan.
Do you essentially think Donald Trump is overpromising here?
I don't know. I mean, look, let's be honest and say that Mr. Trump is a very unusual president-elect. I frankly don't know what he talks about. When he talks about we're going to have, a terrific health care plan or a great health care plan, now that's wonderful. What does it need?
And it's those big questions that brought thousands to rallies today. He will be our president on Friday. What do you think of him?
He makes me very nervous. I think that he told the American people one thing, in that he was going to stand up for working families and the elderly. But since the election, I haven't heard too much talk from him about the campaign promises that he made, that he will not cut Social Security, not cut Medicare, not cut Medicaid.
As we continued our conversation in downtown Burlington,
we can transform this country. Oh,
yeah. It was clear Sanders still has a fan base.
Nice to meet you.
Nice to see you.
But he's uncomfortable when people ask if he'll run for president again. He wants to focus on the issues, not the fame he garnered running for the nation's top office.
What media does is focus on personalities. And you look at politicians as celebrities. They're not. What serious politicians are supposed to be doing is addressing the problems facing the American people. I'm not an entertainer. You know, I don't sing very well. I don't dance very well. I try to represent my state as best I can.
You can watch more of my interview with Bernie Sanders tomorrow at 3 p.m. Eastern on MSNBC. Friday will mark a major moment for Donald Trump, of course, as he prepares to deliver his inaugural address. Will the avid Twitter user be able to use this historic address to unite a deeply divided country? Peter Alexander has that report.
I look very much forward to the inauguration. It's going to be a beautiful event.
For Donald Trump, who's mastered delivering a message in 140 characters or less, just 5 days until the first true test of his presidency, his inaugural address.
I think we're going to have massive crowds because we have a movement. It's a movement like the world has never seen before.
But this Friday, Trump will speak to a nation divided by a historically bitter election.
Donald Trump won an election through division, and an inaugural address is about unification. But he doesn't have much credibility in being a unifying leader.
Speechwriter Michael Gerson helped craft both of President George W. Bush's inaugural addresses.
This is my solemn pledge. I will work to build a single nation of justice and opportunity.
Gerson says a successful speech would inaugurate a period of national healing and national purpose.
Make America great again.
Make America great again is a theme that could be made more aspirational, that could really show his theme at its best.
For generations, inaugural addresses have helped inspire us.
Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
And offered a presidential vision of America.
Government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
We have chosen hope over fear, unity of purpose over conflict and discord.
Now it's Trump's turn to take center stage in American public life, where his words and actions will help set this nation's course. Peter Alexander, NBC News, Washington.
After 146 years in show business, the Ringling Brothers and Barnum and Bailey Circus is set to close following a steep decline in ticket sales. The final performances will take place this May. Tonight, Gotti Schwartz takes a look back at the greatest show on earth.
Before there were TVs, and even before there were 50 states, the Ringling Brothers and Barnum and Bailey Circus was entertaining millions.
The greatest show on earth!
Eric Gillette was a ringmaster for years.
So it was a continuous magical surprise every day and every single show that you performed.
But the circus has been struggling. Last spring, Ringling Brothers retired its elephants to a conservation center in Florida after a long public battle with animal rights groups. Since then, the circus producers say they have seen a dramatic drop in ticket sales, and high operating costs have made it unsustainable. In Florida today, families in line for the circus reacted to the news.
Oh, it's very disappointing. This is something I grew up on, and my parents are here. We have three generations.
Abuse is wrong.
Meanwhile, animal rights activists claim victory.
This is a landmark moment. We're seeing things like SeaWorld with the orca breeding ban there, Ringling taking its elephants, and now all animals off the road. I think people will no longer tolerate animals being abused for their entertainment.
But for Nick Walinda, a former Ringling performer and the daredevil son of a legendary tightrope walking family, the news is painful.
Last night I was in tears when I heard about it because they're the only reason why I'm alive, to be honest. John Ringling saw my family perform over in Havana, Cuba in 1927.
He says circuses are more than just the animal acts, and there has been a failure to adapt.
To see an iconic circus go away is heartbreaking.
Now, the greatest show on earth, set to become an American memory. Gotti Schwartz, NBC News.
So is it better to rent or buy a home? With rising mortgage rates and declining home inventory, people interested in buying their first home are finding that question harder than ever to answer. Jolene Kent has the story.
Adina Solomon and Kevin Gromersch are on the move.
I thought, okay, this is the logical next step in your life. You get married, you buy a house, and this is the way it's supposed to be.
The newlyweds saved up to buy a place of their own, the down payment ready to upgrade from their rented apartment in a suburb of Atlanta.
Yeah, and back to 1%.
But as they crunched the numbers, Solomon and Gromersch realized that now, at least, buying just didn't add up.
We thought our numbers must be wrong because everybody says buying a house is a better deal than renting, but our numbers were showing, well, that's not necessarily true.
After the down payment, taxes, a budget for maintenance, plus rising mortgage rates and an uncertain economy, they started rethinking their search. Here's why. According to Trulia, starter home inventory is down a whopping 40 to 45% since 2012. Home prices are rising in most cities, requiring larger down payments. And the average 30-year mortgage rate is now at 4.3%, up 0.75 point since Donald Trump's election. It's become a seller's market.
Certainly 2017 is going to be more difficult to buy a home than 2016.
What did you ultimately end up deciding to do?
We decided to keep renting.
And why? Well, it made a little bit more financial sense.
Now they're packing up their current place for a better rental deal nearby, while keeping an eye on the housing market. And for those who really do want to buy right now, experts say they should take a long view.
If you can stay put for 7 years, buying is a better deal than renting, no matter where you are in the country.
For others, renting may be the way to go in a changing market that's shaking things up for potential home buyers.
Maybe we're redefining the American dream.
Jolene Kent, NBC News, Roswell, Georgia.
Now for an update on a story we've been following for the past 2 days. Yesterday, teenager Kamaya Mobley met her biological parents in South Carolina for the first time since she was kidnapped as a baby 18 years ago from a Florida hospital. Her father shared this reunion selfie with our affiliate in Jacksonville. He told us he never gave up hope, and seeing his daughter was beautiful. Finally tonight, an update on a story we first brought you back in October. It's about a teenager in Washington State who had a tough start in life, but turned it all around with the help of his high school football coach. As Ann Thompson reports for his family, this new year has taken on extra special meaning.
Football is family, goes the slogan, but it is Roderick Fisher's truth. We first met the high school wide receiver this fall when he was Roderick Jackson.
Which is tougher, Roderick, life or football?
Oh, life, definitely.
At 15, he left an unhealthy home in Spokane, Washington, dropped out of school for a year, and bounced from place to place.
You get sick and tired of the situations you're in, and it's either you continue to do that or you make it better. And for me, I believe it was time to make it better.
Desperate, he turned to his football coach, Adam Fisher.
Okay, on one, down, go.
Fisher and his wife, Jolene, said come live with them and their daughters, Allie and Sydney.
When he came into our house, he had a steep learning curve in terms of just school, to fitting into our family, to understanding boundaries that we had, and then structure in a different environment.
By having those tough times where there was tears shed by everybody, is that you draw closer through that. And you experience that. So it's not just a surface level thing. It's a much deeper love.
A love so deep, this December they made it official.
Roderick, you swooped into our lives on March 2nd, 2016, so that we could rescue you from the conditions of your life. Little did we know that you would rescue us right back.
At a court hearing where voices caught.
Welcome to the Fisher family, Roderick. We will love you today, tomorrow, and for eternity.
And tears flowed. Roderick became a Fisher. Just one of so many reasons to celebrate.
Lost my birthday, so it was like the best birthday present you could get.
In a season where Roderick caught 42 passes and scored 9 touchdowns for all league honors, Roderick is now all Fisher, part of a team, a family for life. Ann Thompson, NBC News, New York.
That is so nice. And that is NBC News for this Sunday, NBC Nightly News for this Sunday. A programming note starting tomorrow, a special nightly news series. Lester Holt travels across America leading up to the inauguration of Donald Trump on Friday. I'm Kate Snow reporting from New York. I'll see you tomorrow on MSNBC. For all of us here at NBC News, have a great night.
Thank you.